one suggestion there is when it comes to our vision, we have a constitution which is the second. There can't be to have the and then constitution with a capital C respected and owned by every South African. Then we refer, we're very much more explicit, I think. Okay?
Just a small correction, point one there, or paragraph one, mandate of the committee says in accordance with the rule 102. Just, must just be rule 102.
Right. Thank you, John.
This could be the vision. I'm not sure if this has been the first time we're adopting a vision, but it's not really I mean, that would then imply that this committee must put a lot of energy into popularizing the Constitution and explaining the Constitution to people. Our role as is here is to review the Constitution, so that's not the same. So I'm not sure if we did adopt this vision on a previous occasion. But I don't think it. I think it's a misleading vision for this committee. You know, because it then implies that we're going to do a whole lot of things that are not actually within our mandate as far as the rules of Parliament go.
Yeah.
We've adopted it already before.
No.
Then
if we're unhappy, we. Because we can always have a look at it again, and we think it doesn't belong on as a vision. I just thought that in a way we do put a focus on the Constitution each year, and in that sense we do because of putting attention. Trying to draw attention by the average or by all South Africans to the Constitution that we are in fact talking about the Constitution, but we have a limited sort of mandate as far as that's concerned. Thank you, Wati.
Yeah, just in general, you know, last time my big spiel was about the typing and layout quality that does not seem to have been checked before it was printed. I mean, right at the start, every chairperson was to check us indented right to the right. It chanced the document to be sloppy, you know what I mean? And then also, your point on the reason to just change the C to a capital, that would be grammatically wrong. Because if you say a constitution, it's one of many. So it's not that, but that constitution might have a capital issue. And I would rather think that our job here is to ensure that that the constitution is at all times respected and owned by every South African. Not to have a constitution, we've got a constitution. But then again, you know, if you go to the next page, you'll see that where I complain about typographical errors. It's still not fixed. 10 March starts with an indent to the left without bullets, but then it has a third sentence that has an A and a B next to each other, but just above it, the indent for the rest of the previous sentence is as if it's a new paragraph. The same with the next two paragraphs on 17 March. And then again on 12 May, the notes have disappeared, but it's now just nothing, 3-4. And 9th of June, also nothing too. You see what I mean? 23 June starts with an indent to the left and then indent to the right. I just think it looks as if it's the typist or the secretary that's still working on the first exam. Sorry, but I'm frenetic with that.
No, fine. Any further comment? Let us just dispense. Do we want to do away with the vision and mission, and then leave it until we've sort of workshopped it again? see John, and then I see Mr. Shicheka.
I mean, Chair, my problem is that whether it's the constitution or a constitution, but to say to have the constitution respected and owned by every South African, that implies that you're going to then put in a lot of energy into popularizing the constitution, because that's basically the only way you can get the constitution owned and respected. We don't do that. Okay, that is, I think, we work out is other bodies' responsibility. Human Rights Commission, particularly the Department of Justice, we at various stages got reports from them because we were wanting to find out what we were, you know, what we're on. And so that's my worry, that having that as the vision implies that we are then going to, I think, that we are then going to do other things that are not within our terms of reference. And maybe it would be better for that issue to stand down and we look at it in more detail at a later point rather than rushing an adoption like now.
Thank you. John, Mr. Shicheka?
Chair, in fact, I want to just raise the same point that the meetings always reach consensus on issues, which is the preferred route. Of course, we agreed that we must engage quite a lot of institutions to tie and sharpen our mandate, and we're in that process of doing that. I think, having said that, therefore, it's important that we leave out this for now. Up until we see it, I know that at an administrative level, officials would like to put the format, you know, this thing of format, follow the format. That's why I'm saying, you know, it must not be a format the way it is. It has to be met at all costs, even areas where we're not clear. Therefore, to me, I think for the purpose of us carrying everybody on board, let's agree that we omit this thing for now. We'll continue with another.
Thank you. Are we in agreement as far as that's concerned? Seems that there's no dissenting voice. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think I'm agreed with that, but also can, in the light of what you said about the chairperson's overview, can we also just remove that item?
We move on to page 3. If there's any, now, as far as the how it's been, the typographical layout is concerned, we know we must look at it, but let us just look at any substantial changes on page 3, changes of substance, page 3. I do think that we have then decided that the members of this committee, that their names will also be listed. Is that correct? Thank you. I do think that the members will then become item number 3, and then support staff will be 4. Are we happy with that? Right. Page 4. Are we happy with page 4?
Question,
the committee would think that it would suffice only to say, for instance, a referral from the Joint Rules Committee of the issue regarding the leader of the opposition. The point is just this, that by only referring to the issue, you know, it's not really very clear what was indeed discussed. Shouldn't we then say, you know, on the question whether the leader of the largest opposition party should be called the leader of the opposition, or something like that, you know. I'm just asking whether we just want to refer it in these terms. If this is fine, then with the committee, then it's okay, but it's just not really clear what issue that is all about, that has been all about.
Thank you. Is our secretary noting these comments? Thank you. You're suggesting further elaboration so that it is just clear. I think what they did was to just take the agenda and our agenda items, which can be misleading if someone just reads the report. So I do think correctly that we just must somewhere say very clearly that we received a referral from National Assembly rules regarding the relevant clause article in the Constitution referring to the leader of the opposition. Okay. Thank you. Let us then go to page 5. Yeah, I think that once we have spelled out what the referral was about, then it will be fine like that. But let us just get clarity on what the referral was. Yeah. Again, I wonder if Mr. Jeffrey... it's difficult. We refer also to the medium statement by Ms. Ed Camera, etc., where we don't go into detail. And someone looking from outside would say, but what is all this about? So the question is, must we go into more detail, or are we satisfied that just this reference is enough?
Yeah, I also noticed that point. I mean, some of it is easy. Like, if you look at the 12th of May report back by Department of Communications, which should be in capital letters, regarding the conversion to the electronic media. And that's not, okay, report back is fine. It was more whether the constitution needs to be amended. As far as the reference to the Independent Broadcasting Authority. And so there's a lot one can actually say in terms of rephrasing. And I had also noticed that, you know, media statement by the Ombudsman's Ed Camera correspondence in this regard, but I just thought it's too complicated to change it. I would have thought leave it as it is. But if other colleagues have more energy.
I think when it comes... sorry, what are you I'm seeing here?
Are we going to still vote? Because I have to go now.
I think that there's no way that we can vote because we haven't got the financial statements. What I'm going to ask in any case, if our members each... are in possession of this report, and that if there are any changes that they would like to suggest, that it comes back to our secretary as soon as possible, and that we will then have to convene a meeting next Friday at 9 o'clock to adopt this report. Thank you. Right, let us just again proceed. Page 5. Sure. Thank you, Wadi. As far as the convergence of the electronic media is concerned, it was in our report, our review report tabled in Parliament, so it is there. It was adopted by both houses, so I'm quite happy as far as that is concerned, that we didn't elaborate again what it is all about. Page 6.
We have a Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, or Land Affairs and Agriculture, but we have the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Land Affairs. I don't recall, I mean, the agriculture officials are here, so they can confirm it, but I mean, the reference should be to Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs get deleted, and it would apply on the following page as well, page 7.
Quite correct. Thank you. Anything else on page 6? Thank you. Then page 7, we've deleted and Land Affairs is there. I don't quite understand why it says at the bottom ND, the committee received 11 submissions. It should just be another sentence saying the committee received 11 submissions. Sorry, you're not showing your hand. You're just having a sip of water. Ready? Okay. Andre?
We're not referring to typographical errors and things like that now, and full stop and so on, but in terms of... Sorry. No, I understand we're not referring to typographical errors and full stops and things like that, but there under 6, the committee placed an advertisement in the media on April, on some other day, or during April 2006.
The referral to the Chapter 9 institutions was mentioned in our report, which was tabled in November. John?
This is probably not one you want to hear, but I'm just sort of wondering, you know, the important thing was the review of the Constitution that we reported on in November, the annual review. Why do we have to adopt this report? What value is there in it? Is there anything here that's of any substance? I know the procedures are that the committee section want this to be done for some or other bureaucratic reason. But I would have thought until such time as the committee section and Parliament get their act together, I don't really see. And the other problem is, you know, this is the annual report for 2006. We're halfway through 2007. So I would have personally thought it would have sent a nice statement to the committee section.
Thank you. don't ask me why, because it seems to be a requirement by the committee section. I don't know if our secretary would like to react on that. But as far as I just know, it is procedure that each committee must adopt an annual report and also the financial sort of statement. So I feel exactly the same as you that you do. I think that the report has only reached us at this late stage and in the condition that it did is absolutely regrettable. I cannot tell you, I can't, and I think my secretary will vouch for the time that we try to panel beat this report into something that is at least presentable. And it's not our work to do the committee section's work. They are paid to do it.
Chair, another more minor thing, but you know, when did we adopt a new logo? I mean, some time ago, and I mean, why do we then still have to have a report, the one that we got given now with the old logo? But anyway, we quite clearly can't adopt today, but I would really say we should seriously think about whether we want to adopt at all. I mean, particularly, I would have thought the main issue would have been the financial statements, but if this is the second meeting, we still can't get the financial statements, then... you know, we need those statements so we can look at them. We don't want to find them in the next meeting and have to rush through them.
Thank you. I just want to also say that I think it was more than 10 days ago that I made my final input into this report, and I had to battle to get a copy yesterday. The financial statements can't be presented to us next Friday. We must have time to look at it. And we've made certain suggestions. Now, I'm going to ask the committee section to make the necessary changes which we suggested to get these reports sent out to our members as soon as possible next week, to give us enough time so that we can do a proper job before adopting it, if we should adopt, including the financial statements. Do I reflect the feeling of this committee? Mr. Shichaka.
Mr. Kuman, I think
it's
interesting that at the end there are two chapters. Two houses, that the minutes must have left. I mean, this thing must be signed by two. Because if it goes to the other side, they can disown it the way it is here. But if it is there, signed by two,
our deputy chair as well. I know that the houses, I don't know NCOP, but I know the NNA will be adjourning next Thursday evening. Friday is still a committee day, and the following week, I'm sure that we would not like to have a meeting on the 29th. So let us have a meeting on the 22nd. We will require a quorum, so I'm really asking our members to attend. It's going to depend on us how long that meeting is for, but we will apply immediately to have such a meeting. Thank you. Sir Ramsey, are you ready? Fire away.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, my apologies first for the problems we had. We went through these, just the reasons for changing the name, and then on to the economic sense of animal care and protection. I think this is very important because the public, our clients, everybody is starting to ask questions about animals. And the big question is always, were your animals happy? And that's very important. So it's becoming a very important factor in trade, so we have to do something about it. And we need to generate a culture of caring for animal resources supported by the right legislation. If you go to a country like Canada, there's a caring for the environment, the animals built in. It's a way of life there. And I think we can create the same culture in South Africa. It's possible, and I think we need to do this. If we look at the freedoms, and we mentioned this last time, so I'll just go quickly through them, but these are the five freedoms that the OIE recognizes, and that's the freedom from hunger, thirst, and malnutrition, the freedom from fear and distress, and the freedom from physical and thermal discomfort, the freedom from pain, injury, and disease, and the freedom to express normal patterns of behavior. Now, what we've done with our documents that we are converting into regulations is that we start with this preamble in all the documents to really make this quite an important thing. If we look at our legislation at the moment, and we discussed this last time, direct legislation of the two, Animals Protection Act and the Performing Animals Protection Act. I haven't added the SPCA's Act into this because that's more of an organizational act. We don't want to have that affected in any way by the legislation. It's quite important for them to have that because they have a way now of organizing all the SPCAs. But you also have the Animal Diseases Act, the Animal Improvement Act, and then very important, the National Environmental Management Act as well. And then I put the SPCA Act down there as other legislation that impacts on animal care and protection. If we look at the moment in the animals we have included, are currently included, and that you normally read about, is mainly animals used for breeding and production, the animals used for agricultural and other research, our draft animals. And then you've got working animals, which is your sheep dogs, security dogs, etc. Security animals, animals used for sport and recreation, your game animals or wildlife, those that are used for farming purposes as well, your companion and captive animals, your zoo and performing animals, and then marine animals as well. Our biggest problem with the legislation, and I think we discussed this last time, is the fact that our laws are basically adapted from countries with uniform populations and cultures. And the emphasis has been on the prevention of cruelty rather than on the care of animals. Much better to be proactive than reactive. And to apply that in a country with diverse cultures, and you discussed this last time as well, looking at the issue of using animals for traditional ceremonial purposes, it's very difficult because you do have customs that could be overlooked, and we do have a constitution that respects all cultures and practices thereunder. So this is quite often open to abuse by local and international organizations that may value the rights of animals above human rights for food safety and security. It's one of the reasons we've got good legislation. If we have responsibilities, we don't have to recognize animals as sentient beings because the legislation does that in any case. What we need is a general policy focusing and emphasizing the responsible care of animals. We mentioned this last time. We have changed the name, and that delayed issues, but I think the fact that we looking at care and protection is the right way to go. We just need to speed up the process now so that we can consult this with the public. We need specific guidelines, codes, norms, and standards to monitor the multitude of activities. And this is quite important. What's also important is that we need to monitor the activities of animal care and protection organizations so that they do act responsibly as well and in the interest of South Africa. And then we need a National Animal Care and Protection Advisory Committee or Working Group. This is similar to what's been used in Australia, but it does give you the advantage to have an advisory group which would have representatives from all sectors. in other words, from your animal rights people, your anti-vivisectionists, everybody, so that they do have a voice when it comes to deciding on major issues. And then we need one Animal Care and Protection Act that's fairly, you know, self-explanatory, and we are working on that in reviewing what's available in other countries. The important thing is, what have we done about it? We've worked on the policy. I was hoping actually to have that circulated already, but the name changes and a few internal things have delayed that. But maybe you as a committee could ask our department to get a bit of a move on that. Just don't quote me on that. We've responded to several cabinet ministerial other inquiries. One of the more well-known ones is the one on the issue of the First Fruits Festival with the torturing of a bull eater. We've come out with some suggestions there, and we're trying to get a committee together or a working group together to include this as part of the procedures of guidelines for the and norms and standards for the ceremonial use of animals. We're establishing an Animal Care and Protection Working Group. This will be a smaller group to start off with, so that we can look at the terms of reference based mainly, most probably, on the Australian and New Zealand ones, where you've got people who, the minute they're on this group, they lose their affiliations because they become technical advisors, which may be a good way to go. But it does mean that you can cater for all, from the animal rights people down to the research and development people. We have dealt with some OIE animal welfare matters. They still talk about welfare, and we've aligned some of our activities to OIE where it's applicable. And we're busy introducing the concept of animal care and protection. And then what we've done, as I mentioned earlier, and you've got examples of that, we've brought in the care and protection concept in all our livestock management norms and standards. What we're looking at the moment, and this is just to give you an idea of what we have looked at, where there are norms and standards and where we are adapting these to be more aligned. Handling facilities, animal housing, management practices. You're looking at issues like deorning, castration, etc., where you do need guidelines. The transport of animals, quite a critical one. And there comes in your standard and ceremonial slaughter practices, feedlots, sporting activities, your working animals, pounds, fairly important because there's also pounds legislation, and often the animals in pounds are neglected. We need something there. Animal welfare organizations and inspectors to get them registered, possibly in terms of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Act as paraveterinarians, so that you have a better control over the monitoring of the activities. The care of animals used for research. Kennels, the management of kennels, in other words, how these are dealt with. Captive animals, companion animals, and then rehabilitation centers. All of these activities, we've done something. So what we've looked at is getting an animal care and protection unit that can deal with these. And what this component will basically do is administer the legislation, look at the regulations, norms and standards in consultation with the Animal Care and Protection Working Group. They will manage this as a focal point, and we're looking at the administration, the idea of the model of Australia and New Zealand, because it seems the most applicable to South Africa. And they will also liaise with the OIE Committee on Animal Welfare. And then implement a national animal care and protection program along the lines of land care. It's actually why we took that logo, which some of you might recognize as almost the land care logo, and instead of Africa in the middle there, we've gone and put a few animals. The graphic artist, unfortunately, I did that myself, so if there's anything wrong with it, you know. The training and deployment of community animal care protection workers, it's a concept we want to try and get going. We have a similar thing with milk recorders and with felt and forage workers. We're looking at possibly getting young graduates who are unable to find employment and then training them as animal care workers, maybe contracting the SPCA to do that. But it will mean that we will then be able to deploy these people in the provinces to help develop an animal care and protection program. Our strategic partners at the moment are all the animal welfare societies, the veterinary association, the veterinary faculty at the university, the Livestock Welfare Coordinating Committee, the Association for Laboratory Sciences, the Anti-Vivisectionists, the Veterinary Foundation, EFA South Africa, producer organizations, zoos, marine animal centers, working dog groups, the Animal Traction Network, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. We've actually asked them to draft the Rehabilitation Center guidelines, and then a lot of government departments as well. I think it's important that this is a joint responsibility, you could say social responsibility, so we need to work as a team with any other departments and local governments that would be involved in this process. Yeah. It's just that I can maybe just tell you what it's about. It's a concept of what they call passing on the gift. And the whole idea started in the United States, the worldwide organization where people are given a gift of a pregnant heifer. When that heifer calves, if it's a heifer calf, it is then looked after, and once it's pregnant, it's given to another family. So it's a passing on of a gift from family to family, and it goes on along with the responsibility of caring for that animal, making sure it's fed well. And in South Africa, we've concentrated on milk goats, chickens, pigs, and dairy cattle. So it's an organization that's really bringing over the whole concept of animal care right down to grassroots level, because they've been able to really reach the poorest of the poor. It's mainly in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo province at this moment, but we're hoping to expand this to the whole of South Africa, because it's really a way to bring across the concept, and also the concept of social responsibility as far as sharing is concerned. It's been highly successful, so that's why we put them in as a strategic partner. If we look at the DRA strategic partners, it's mainly the Directorate of Animal Health and Animal Aquaculture Production. My colleague is from Animal Health. And at the moment, we're looking at a shared responsibility with the focal point being with Animal Health. Our legal services may need to do the regulations, and it is here that we may need to outsource to get the thing moving faster, because they've got a lot of work, and it might be better to outsource this to some private legal practitioner so that they can vet the regulations before the department processes them further. Our communication department, Directorate Education Training, and then our human resource component, to make sure that we've got the people to man this component. As mentioned, what we've done is made sure that all our activities now include an animal care component, and you've seen the guidelines for animal traction and the guidelines for urban and peri-urban animal agriculture. I can maybe add what the idea of this was, is that this document goes to local government. So if a municipality is looking at the possibility of bringing in a livestock component in their assistance program, they now have a guideline that enables them to see how to do this, because we have had quite a bit of concern about the fact that some municipalities have been giving people animals without making sure that the people can actually look after those animals. So we're trying to reverse that situation so that there's a concept of infrastructure first, training first, making sure that people do know how to look after the animals before they get the animals, because it's better for both the people and the animals. Our new developments, we're looking at marine animals. Obviously, we don't have the expertise to deal with this, so it's been outsourced at the moment. But looking at marine animal centers, in other words, your dolphinariums and that, your rehabilitation and rescue issues where penguins, etc., etc., and then the care of marine animals. So we're looking at the broad spectrum. We're doing the same with the wildlife industry, looking at suitable species, stocking rates, production systems, and capture and transport. we've accepted the fact that, that game farming or wildlife ranching is a part of agriculture, and that we need norms and standards for animals that are kept under these circumstances as well as your normal circumstances. What we've done with the Veterinary Foundation, as I mentioned, is to put together a manual. I have it in rough format, and I could, with their approval, I could make it available for this to this committee to have a look at. But we've tried to deal with every single activity in South Africa where animals are involved. We've even brought in a group called the Friends of the Rat, who are concerned about the welfare of laboratory rats and those that are fed to pet snakes and that. So we're trying to, you know, bring all of this in to make sure that we do recognize any concerns that the public may have. This one includes wildlife photography even, you know, to make sure that people don't disturb the animals angling. I hope I don't get charged with for catching trout one day, but anyway, you know, we're trying to get all of this put together. I've colored this just to give you an idea of where we are at the moment. Amber being just about there. We'd like to have our policy finalized by the last quarter of this year, in other words, ready for cabinet endorsement, because we believe the only way that policy can work is if cabinet endorses it, because then you have a better acceptance by the provinces. So it's got a long process to go, but I believe this is the right way to go, or we believe that's the right way to go, because then we have a document that has been accepted by all, and everybody has had the opportunity to participate in the preparation. Our animal care and protection component is fairly functional. We need to get some to finalize a few administrative issues, but we do have a component that deals with these issues now. We need to get our working group going. So this is in red at the moment, or pink, not quite red, because we're getting to the yellow stage. And we're looking at the third quarter of this year to have that functional. Our animal care and protection program is starting to work. We've got the community animal care program where we're using NAFPO and other organizations to start bringing the concept of animal care into domestic livestock at the moment. We have a whole list of regulations, guidelines. That's been held up by manpower issues at the moment, so just capacity. So that's why it might be an idea to outsource this, to speed this up so that we can submit regulations to our minister, because she would then make them in terms of the Animals Protection Act. And then the last one, which will take a bit of time still, is the Animal Care and Protection Act. In other words, consolidating the two old acts, modernizing them, making sure that we recognize critical issues in South Africa, and putting all that together. I think, just to end off, at the end of the day, we need to make sure that